And oh, hey, there it is. Hello and welcome to Pints and Pairings. I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop at 10.
And I'm Jason Hendrick with Everybody's Hungry.
This is the warm-up, kind of shake the cobwebs out.
Yeah, we haven't been in the Louderton studios in a little while.
I know. So behind the scenes, we've got cameras in between us. And so right now, as I'm looking into the camera, I'm actually looking it's kind of a webcam unicorn thing going on for you. It's right in your forehead for me. So I'm gonna have to keep myself from
wiggling
around. Yeah, kind of coming off to the side, make sure I'm talking directly into the microphone so you can hear the sultry sound of my voice.
It is kind of sultry today.
Is it? I don't know.
Were you up late last night?
No.
Are you FMing?
FMing.
That's my wife's uncle who used to be in radio. He had a food show in New Orleans and was actually very popular. They had a TV show as well for a while. He says that he likes his voice FMing. Like, there's nothing like a cigar and a night of wine the day before being on the radio because it gave him a deeper bass. And when he was home visiting, or up here visiting recently for Thanksgiving, he had one of those evenings up all night cooking and prepping for Thanksgiving. And the next day he's like, wow, my voice is really FMing today. And we're like, what are you talking about? Apparently it's a term. It's an industry term. What do they call that? The terrestrial radio world?
If I didn't have to smoke a cigar, I think I'd be on top of that. I'd be okay. It's the whole smoking bit that kind of pushes
me. Leaves your mouth tasting like poop the next day.
Yeah, I don't need to be sucking on a big old turd. Oh, this tastes so good, and it goes great with this beer. Wow. You know, that's one of the things that I haven't been able to wrap my head around. And just because it kills my palate so much, and I understand people think that there's just this incredible thing pairing these big beers and a cigar, and even to a certain extent whiskeys and bourbons, but I can see maybe the whiskey and bourbon as being able to hold up and cleanse your palate, but I want to enjoy my beer way more than I want to smoke anything. And I just, I don't know, there's something about it. And I'm real sensitive to nicotine, so I can take one drag and my head will just be swimming. And
you got to be cautious with the cigars. I was on a trip in Cozumel with some dive friends one time. We were celebrating the first night of diving. Had a, you know, a really good meal and decided to break out cigars and beer. And I was one of the first times I've ever taken full hits of a cigar, like actually sucked it in and inhaled it and tried to, on the walk home, boy, it was rough. It does leave you with an intoxication, just you know, a whole night of drinking.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can read. The last time I did that, actually, I smoked a cigar was in the town I used to live in. It was the university's homecoming and all my fraternities, and it's where I went to school at and everything else. And so I was one of the few that stayed back from my generation, you know, that span of about 4 years at the house. And so they would always, I would just happily throw a backyard bash, you know, the night before. We would sleep through the parade, of course, the next day, and then pick up somewhere around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. But I can remember that Saturday night that I took, somebody showed up with some vanilla somethings, and they were so good, and I smoked two of them, and I mean, I hadn't been drinking all that much, but it made me pass out. I mean,
With a good cigar, it's easy to do. Like that, we were, again, down in Cozumel, and someone had access to some contrabanded Cuban cigars.
It's a contraband in Mexico, though?
No, but I don't think they originated in Mexico. I think they were brought in someone's luggage.
So they were smuggled into the U.S., and then they were smuggled back into Mexico.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. But they were very smooth, velvety, and actually had a good depth of flavor. And I could see why they would go with like an intense barley wine or a great bourbon barrel, you know, stout or something. But to your point, one, it's going to hit your system pretty hard, and the next day it always leaves me like a mouthful of pot soil.
Do you remember the scene in Beer Fest when the Party Brigade breaks into the party and Fink, the Jew physicist or whatever, biologist, he's in there and the guy's saying, okay, you got to try this. Now, what you do is you take a hit and then you shotgun the beer and then you take a shot and then you exhale. And he goes, whew, what was that called? Okay. And then he just kind of lays down on the kitchen floor. That's what it was like that
night.
That's
how you feel.
And we had a fire pit. I just remember kind of curling around the fire pit. And it was kind of raining because it's October 6th.
Oh, that had been just an enormous tingling of sensation.
It felt so good. The warmth. The and then just this cool sprinkle on my face, but I wasn't in any hurry to get up and move out of the way.
That's how people like in Alaska and that, though, you know, they get into trouble because they get all drunk or they're intoxicated on cigars and like, oh, I'm so warm and comfy, but I need a little crisp air. And they go outside and they end up in the snowbank.
Drinking is
the worst. You're a South Dakotan, you know that.
Drinking is the worst thing to do if you're going to be outside. You know, the Bugs Bunny cartoons with the big old Saint Bernard, and he's got the
barrel
of rum or whatever it is underneath it. Yeah, that's really great for making you freeze fast.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I'm done. Let's just get this over with real quick. You know,
people think it's warming them, but actually, as we all know scientifically, the alcohol makes your body lose heat faster.
Yeah. Well, I had a Cuban in Belgium, and I can't even remember, Monte Cristo's maybe but I would get the stubby ones.
Yeah.
And I could only even smoke half of those. You know, when I was actually enjoying and smoking and trying to learn about cigars probably 15 years ago, and I had a Cuban, and it was a long one, and I smoked that whole thing. And to your point, what you were talking about, it was just so smooth and everything else, and a certain amount of it was probably me buying into the hype that this is a Cuban.
Sure.
But I never smoked a full cigar before, and it was just this so smooth. And part of it had to do, you know, we talk a lot about the perfect beer, and I can't even remember what who we were having conversations with about the perfect beer. Oh, it was Jamil Zainchef, and how your experience or what's happening in the moment plays such a big role, influence your role. Well, you know, I'm walking down a wooded lane out in the middle of the countryside in Belgium smoking a Cuban cigar. So that had a lot to do with my pleasure of the deal, but I still smoked the whole thing.
Well, and the Cubans, I think part of why they're so sought after and popular is very similar to when we talk about American cigarettes or spirits, you know, the distillation of spirits, the purity of it, and the minimal additives or impurities that you find in the product. Because, you know, like with spirits, I was just up at Ascendant this past weekend talking to Steve Gerbman, doing a little tour. I hadn't been up there before, tried their spirits, but not actually been to the facility. And they were referencing cutting the heads and tails off of spirits during distillation to remove the toxins and the impurities so you get a great heart of that alcohol. The less impurities in any of those products, the less impact negatively on the body in terms of hangover or, you know, that fuzzy mouth. And I think the Cuban tobacco leaves that are used are some of the most just concentrated flavor and pure that you're going to get out there, and they're not putting any chemicals into the wrap. So that may be part of it too. People just love that. Again, for me, it's a velvety, earthy kind of feeling and flavor that comes out, and you don't have to worry about any harsh, dirty aftertaste.
You know, for anyone who's listening to this on podcast, you don't know that Jason is also part of the Happy Hour with Joe and Curtis show, where we do spirits and we talk about everything else. Beer is also included, but
it's all adult beverage industry.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've been doing too is we've had, so this is your second distillery tour in less than a week.
Yeah,
You know, I have not been to Ascendant, but we've done Refined Distillery, and where they make their spirits out of grape juice. And talking about the heads and the tails, and the heads is all this acetone and everything else. So when they say if you open something and it smells like fingernail polish, it's because there's acetone in it, and a fingernail polish remover, I should say, it's because it has acetone. That's the chemical. So if you are a nail painter, whether you're male or female, you know the smell, or you live with somebody who is, you know the smell of it, and that's not good. That's not good for your body, you know. And those are the things that when people were learning how to distill, other than you know, you hear about the going blind and all that stuff, it's those nasty chemicals that get cut out by master distillers or, you know, people who know how to do it. I guess because the reason I say I kind of balked on that was when we were at Cutler's, he kind of shies away from calling himself a master distiller.
Right.
But you still have to have the knowledge in order to make a commercial product. You know, but if you're just doing it back at home, if you don't get those cuts the right way, then you're ingesting a lot of toxins.
Sure, and I think that, you know, holds true across a lot of these industries that we talk about. And some of the, what I would refer to as the finer things, the spirits, the beer, you know, high-end beers, wines, tobacco, they're all kind of luxury items that people view as a craft. And, you know, as you mentioned, we were talking with Ian at Cutler's. He doesn't refer to himself as a master distiller, but there's a certain mastery that comes about with that. And the reason he doesn't refer to himself as a master distiller is because he feels like there's not a great designation of what that means. A lot of people will call them a master distiller, but there's not a like a certified program such as a Cicerone or a Sommelier or a head brewer program that gives you the skill. It's largely an apprenticeship, and you're learning from someone else who's been in that craft for many years. He views himself as a head distiller. But there's still mastery involved with that creativity and the skill. With the tobacco, it's going to be the same way. You're going to find people who have been harvesting tobacco their whole lives, generational through their family, and they know the best leaves to select. They know, you know, the right soil and growth period, and that's how they're able to get to such a quality product. They've taken on the responsibility of cultivating their craft.
Yeah, the whole master thing, too. I've run into brewers who will say, no, I'm a head brewer, I'm just a brewer, I'm whatever, and shying away from the brewmaster thing for a similar reason. And you know, I should know what the distinguishing facts are, but, you know, there's some of the... I remember having a conversation with one brewer and saying, no, you know, I'm not a brewmaster. He was delineating it by, you know, having had... completed a course at Siebel Institute, which is, there's a small one here in the U.S., but more importantly, you know, the big one, you have to go to Germany in order to complete that. And then once you have that degree from that institute, then you're the master brewer kind of thing. And so whether it was Siebel or it was a different one, that was where he was kind of, the distinction he was playing with. And to, even though we're quite knowledgeable about all of these areas, I still use those terms interchangeably when I shouldn't be using them. You know, you're the head brewer, you know, because if people called us, you know, I get I don't know. I guess I'm aware of people using the incorrect terms for beers, so I should be aware of the incorrect terms for brewers, artisans, craftsmen.
Well, and some of that, I think, has to do with identifying that common language and verbiage, because as you mentioned, some brewers, head brewers, and maybe even brewers who would be in a master brewer designation are very humble about their designation and their title, and others are very, you know, distinct about where they have arrived in terms of their industry. So, you know, you have to feel your audience out a little bit, too, and if there's dissension or disagreement inside the industry internally about how they delineate themselves with title and with role, it's not going to be any easier for us to make that distinction. So, right. Yeah. But ultimately, all those individuals who are practicing their craft day in and day out and have a passion for their production, whether, again, it's beer, wine, spirits, cigars, culinary, all that translates into what's in your glass and on your plate. And that's part of our role as your beer suggestioneer is to bring both a common language, a comfort, right, and just some fun and identifying these different areas.
So I had a really good beer pairing yesterday. And
I saw your hashtag field pairing.
Field pairing. And, you know, just because one of the things that we like to talk about, too, is just that it's not necessarily the food, you know. It's what the situation is, to, you know, leading back to the conversation of what's the best beer you've ever had and how your experience plays into that. Well, so it was Mother's Day yesterday. And
I have related to everybody.
And I have two children of unplanning age, okay? So I'm still largely in charge of not just reminding them that Mother's Day is coming up, but planning for it. And, sure. And I enjoy that, too, because I love my wife and I love my kids and everything else. So I love to help and kind of shower the whole day and have a lot of fun with it. So we went on a hike, and here in Southern California. So what's the point? Is that Point Conception? Is that right at like a Gaviota kind of area?
I believe that's the correct point.
So one of the things that's really weird about Southern California that it took me probably 2.5 years to figure out is that when you think you're going north, you're really going west. And when when you think you're going west, you're actually going south.
Yeah, when you're facing the ocean for the sun to drop, it's going to come over your right shoulder.
So Point Conception, so, you know, from LA is actually east of us, more or less, rather than south from where we are. And so, and it does that all the way to Santa Barbara, a little past Santa Barbara, where California finally starts to go back north. So there's this, there's a state park there called Gaviota, and there's a like a 3 mile hike there, and it's to these wind caves. So, you know, these sandstones that have been carved out by millions of years of wind erosion and everything else, really great. We go up, have a great hike, because hike's one of the things that my wife really loves to do. And so we got back down, went to the beach, had this nice just a nice picnic, and because she was, I don't know, do you know Sophie from the little cans of California Bubbly? So it's one of our favorite ones. It tastes really great, but being able to take it to the beach.
It's transportable.
Right. You can open it up and drink it at the beach.
Most people would not think of a sparkling wine in a can as a it's like wine in a box.
Right.
You know, there's a perception there, but Sophie is actually a pretty quality sparkling wine, especially in the way you're able to transport.
It's the movie people in Napa, and I'm trying to think of what it is. Anyway, so we had a couple of those, and I knew that Genevieve was going, my wife was going to have a couple of those, and that I was going to need to be able to drive all of us back home. So I have a couple session IPAs, which we'll get into here coming up into the next segment. But, you know, just being able to open this big old 16-ounce can that's of a 4% beer, and the reason it's 4% is because it's coming out of Utah, and that's the only...
They're tough up there.
That's what you're going to get unless you go to the liquor store, and then you can buy some higher ABV stuff. But at the grocery store, I bought all this, drinking it and going, what is wrong? I can't, you know, I've had two of these cans.
I'm not feeling anything.
Yeah, and I could do cartwheels and handstands, and I'm as nimble as
I was. Maybe it was working more than you expected then, because I've never seen you do cartwheels and handstands. maybe it actually was kicking in.
I suppose that's, you've got a point there. But you know, it's a 4% IPA, and just to be able to have it on the beach, and it's in a can, you know, that's a great part of this craft beer movement. And we're drinking one right now out of a can too, an IPA out of a can. Just to be able to go and have it at the beach
and
drink it out of a can and just have fun.
So, holds the temperature great as well. It keeps the light out. A lot of breweries are moving this direction. The Sophia that we are talking about is actually from Francis Ford Coppola Winery. Coppola. And I was familiar with the brand because actually that was the sparkling that they used kind of to announce and celebrate my niece's birth, who's also Sophia, so it kind of worked hand in hand. The beer you referenced that we're drinking right now is the Elevated IPA out of the Albuquerque region.
Oh, yeah.
I like to view it as a region because my brother lived there, and there's not a lot else around Albuquerque besides some great hiking, but this is La Cumbre Brewing Company out of Albuquerque. The Elevated comes in at 7.2%, but it is a whole pint in the can. We'll do a little shout. It's one of my newest favorite IPAs, and it's hard to get our hands on it here because they don't distribute in California right now, so I rely on my familial connections and trade, but we're hoping actually to feature them down the road.
Looks like there's a Great American Beer Festival.
There is. You are quite astute in your observation. They won gold medal for the Elevated IPA in 2011 at the GABF.
Oh, very nice.
And it comes out, I think, I'm not going to taint your perception. I'd like to kind of get what you think you're smelling and tasting out of this beer, but there are a few reasons why I really like it lately.
Well, when I first, you know, it smells like an IPA. I mean, plain and simple. It's a nice hop aroma, and I know you were worried that there was going to be, that you've been sitting on it for a while and you wanted to drink it before, while it was fresh or before it got too old. It held a lot of hop aroma, and the normal ones that I'm thinking of are the kind of piney and grapefruity sort of aromas. The flavor for me, the hop flavor though, is real resinous. It's it's been a while since I've had a drink, but it's still coating my palate.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. And I'm definitely wearing concert on that description. For me, there's definitely good balance between the pininess and fruit on the aroma. The grapefruity aspect, there's almost a little bit of a kind of a mango-y tangerine underlying in there for me too. But on the palate, it is more resinous versus piney. There's still some fruit that comes out, though. The term I've been using lately for some of the IPAs we've been testing is juicy. And that's coming for me from the balance of the hops and the grapefruit aspects that are coming out. Some hop and fruit combinations actually come out like juicy fruit gum. And this one is not quite that intense in terms of the sweetness of the fruit, but I think it really works well. I wouldn't go so generic as to say it's tropical, but there are some tropical fruits in there. You know, we're getting a balance of some, you know, that mango papaya and a little bit of citrus. To me, it's a very balanced IPA, especially coming in at 7.2%.
Well, I think one of the things that makes it really drinkable, too, is one, well, it's 7.2, you said? 7%?
Yep.
So it's got a heft of alcohol in it. Now, I was drinking, it's reminiscent of one recently that I had, which was Stone's Delicious IPA.
Yes.
And they're both similar in the fact that they hit you with this big hop flavor bitterness. There's a tiny bit of break where you get this little bit of malt sweetness where it's a rest.
Yeah.
And then it's after all that washes back, then your mouth is coated again. And what that essentially does is it says, okay, you need to take another drink.
Yeah,
because your body is trying to wash it out.
There is a dryness that happens for sure. And I think the Delicious is a good comparison, although for me the Delicious is a little more that kind of pineapple juice and lemony acidic direction. But I think they leave the same kind of mouthfeel, and they definitely make you salivate in a way that you're like, oh, it tasted good, but I'm dry enough, I need another drink.
Yeah, I think it's the Stone one, and maybe on Super Fresh that this one is the same way too, that if this has been sitting in the can for just a little bit, the hop flavor bitterness punch will have died back a little bit. But the Stone, the Delicious one, really does punch, and it's a fun. I'm guessing that this one is probably fairly similar to that.
And as this warms up, if anyone is able to get their hands on it, as it warms up and it softens a little bit just with the temperature, it's going to leave a little bit more, almost like those dull tropical juices, the blends. We get like a little bit of a mango banana fruitiness, kind of that warm, like sugary, but not, I'd say sugary, but it's not like sugar juice. It's not like a concentrated juice that's been reestablished. I love this beer. My brother just arrived in Korea a couple days ago, and my connection is not quite as solidified. You know, I could ask my sister-in-law, but it's a little different when you have the beer drinker of the family helping you secure the beer versus the wife.
So. Well, it reminds me of, we're talking about all these different flavors, and one of the things that Jason and I have been doing too is, I mean, we've been between the happy hour shows or even a smattering of things all over the place. I don't even know if smattering is a word, but we've been all over the place. One of the most recent ones is the Old Town Tavern. It's a brand new craft bar, beer bar, restaurant.
Gastropub
in Camarillo.
And Ali makes such a strong distinction because that came directly from the GM. So we want to honor designation.
A gastropub, certainly. Emphasis on regional beers, so Southern California kind of beers, going up through California too. But what brought me to that was as we're drinking one of these beers, they're talking about it, and if you can remember which one it was that we were talking about, they're talking about it being a lemon starburst. And so and it might have been the Delicious.
That was the Delicious.
So just remembering that we talk a lot about fruit flavors and, you know, tropical fruits, and certainly you pull out mango and papaya, and we talk about grapefruit, and we talk about all these other flavors where these foods will pair well with. Don't forget some of these, maybe your guilty pleasures or memories from when you were a kid, you know, because as soon as they said lemon starburst, that is exactly what it was. And it, and that beer needed that sweetness in order to counteract the hot presence in the beer. So,
we want to remind everyone too, just real quick, that Pints and Pairings is brought to us and to you with support from Weird Driving, the designated driving service based in Oxnard, California. Give them a visit at weirddriving.com, weredriving.com. If you're not in Southern California and you're still a great fan of the show, find a designated driving service in your area.
Get home safe and keep everyone else safe, definitely. My alarm went off a couple minutes ago, and I still wanted to hit a really important topic before that. But it'll go well with the next couple beers, and it'll be kind of a serious joking kind of bit. But we'll get to that.
I'm intrigued.
So let's close out the opening segment.
Well, if I have to stay tuned for this, that means you should stay tuned as well.
So we'll catch you in just a few minutes. As always, thank you for listening or watching and or liking us, sharing us on all the other great things that you do to help promote our show. We really appreciate that. And, I want to remind you to eat, drink, and be happy.
See you at the next pour.
Cheers.
Cheers.